You're listening to CITR's UBC 100 Doc Series. We are broadcasting from the ancestral unceded territory of the Hukkaminam-speaking Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. In the last year, CITR has been digitizing our collection of reel-to-reel tapes and cassettes. These contain an archive of audio broadcast on UBC's campus and community radio station between 1949 and the late 90s. With help from UBC University Archives and the UBC Library Digitization Center, over 400 audio files are now available for the public to hear and download. In order to share this history, we have made a series of documentaries produced by students and community broadcasters. This project is funded by UBC's Centennial Initiatives Fund, celebrating a century of success at UBC. Tune in every Friday at 9 a.m. for the next 6 weeks, from May 20th to June 24th, for a new documentary. And visit our website, citr.ca, for podcasts and more information.
The biggest thing, you know, is give the players credit and the assistant coaches credit, and then, you know, we'll take it as it is. You know who Dizzy Dean is?
Who's that?
He was a great baseball pitcher. He was the last pitcher in the major leagues that won 30 games.
What team was that for?
St. Louis Cardinals, okay. 1935. Anyhow, you know, he went on and became a baseball commentator, you know, and when he was a baseball commentator, they said something to him about, you know, bragging, and he said it ain't bragging when you've done it.
The football program at the University of British Columbia has come a long way since its humble beginnings. Nicknamed the Thunderbirds, the program has won the regional tournament, the Hardy Cup, 16 times since its origin. They have also won the Vanier Cup, the national title, 4 times. The program dominates a large part of student life and culture at the university, and its successes have contributed to what the university is today. Hello, my name is Olamide Olanyan, and you're listening to Gentleman and General, A Tale of Two Vanier Cups, a documentary produced for CITR's An Audio Evolution of UBC project. In this production, I am going to tell you a story about Coach Frank Smith and his Vanier Cup winning Birds, the team that many pundits have described as the greatest team in Vanier Cup history. A story of a man and his ragtag team of student athletes and how they returned a beaten down, trodden upon football program to its former glory and made it a force to be reckoned with. But for this story, we've got to go back, way back. Okay, so let's start off with the University of British Columbia, UBC, and the state of their athletics program prior to 1974. During Coach Frank Knupp's 18-year tenure as the T-Birds head coach, he won 4 Hardy Cups and 2 Western Canada Intercollegiate Championships. His Thunderbirds won their last trophy in 1967. And even before then, UBC's football program was something to write home about. They helped establish the WIFL with Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and Alberta in 1927, and proceeded to win the Vanier Cup 11 times. And the Birds were recruiting better classes each year. But somehow, somewhere along the road, the improvements they made before each season stopped sticking. In 1970, their quarterback completed only 30% of his passes. In an interview with the UBC after their season had ended, Knupp said that his players were leaving whatever they'd learned during the practice on the practice field. UBC was beginning to look like a team that would give up an easy point or two. Their regional rival, Simon Fraser University, perennially smacked them back and forth across Vancouver in the Shrum Bowl from 1967 to 1971, and they took more than their fair share of new recruits every year. In short, UBC's football program was crumbling, and it was badly in need of some saving. This all changed in 1973.
Yeah, who am I talking to?
That's Frank. who this story is largely centered around. Frank Smith was born in Vancouver in 1931, a dark year for many around the world. The Great Depression was now in full swing, and the memories aren't usually particularly fond enough to remember. A global economic depression, the biggest of the 20th century. So yeah, we're probably not going to go into that. I mean, Frank wouldn't even really talk much about it.
Yeah, I, you know, my childhood wasn't a very good time in my life. And, you know, I don't have too much to say about that because it's one of those things. You know, I was born during the Depression, and it was a tough time for everybody at that point in time. So I just assume not, you know, get into that situation. I got involved in football, you know, I guess I really got started at Vancouver College. I played there for 3 years, and then I went down to a junior college in the States and played for a couple years, and then played in the CFL for 4 years, I guess it was. And then I kind of got into coaching after that. So it's not that exciting. I really liked it. You know, I played some baseball and so forth, and I boxed a bit in that, but I really liked the football and so on, so I kind of stayed with it. It was, you know, the Lions didn't exist at that point in time. You know, I was in, when I started in the 1950s, early 1950s, I started in 1940s, actually. Let's see, about 1947, 1948. You know, the Lions didn't exist, and, you know, the CFL, as we know it now, was kind of a distant thing. We followed more American college football on the radio, first of all, and then, of course, the television came along a little later. But I really liked it. That's all. I got playing, and I enjoyed it, and it's been a pretty good part of my life, or it was a good part of my life.
I was a teacher. I taught kindergarten to grade three mainly.
That was Frank's lovely wife, Diane Smith.
And many years of teaching. And I had the football in my life was following along with my husband's games. I didn't miss a game. My son Casey, when he was younger, he played for the West Side Warriors. And I used to take our daughter Lori and her friends up to see him play up at Sheldon Park. And I would kind of coach the girls. They had little uniforms that we'd made. And I'd say, okay, it's first and 10, do it again. And the girls would say that and jump up and down while Casey's team was playing. So that was kind of fun. So we've had a lot of football.
They met in the most precious way you can imagine.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I didn't know you were going to do this. All righty. I was on a blind date.
Okay.
And the date was going to the football game. And he was playing with Winnipeg at that time.
That's the Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
And the people I went with, I had to look down on the field. And just a secchi, Frank, what was your number when you played for Winnipeg?
Oh, that's way back, 55.
Number 55. So when we ended up after the game meeting him, he had hurt his knee, and I had to meet him up in the Vancouver Hotel. We went up to see him because the coach had put him to bed with a big ice pack on his knee. So he said, when I come back into town, I'll be here again. I want to take you out. So that's how I met him.
Frank loved football, so he wanted to try his hands at coaching and, you know, dab it a little before finally deciding that he wanted to come back to Vancouver.
Yeah, well, what we did is we came back. My wife is from Vancouver, and I'm from Vancouver, too. I was born here and so on. So we came back on the idea of coming back and working for the Lions back in, let's see, that would have been 1970. But in actuality, that thing didn't work out. So I spent a few years at a high school over in West Van, and then the UBC job opened up, and some people encouraged me to apply for it. So there I landed at UBC.
Now, of course, this isn't some magical Cinderella story like Coach Carter or Rocky, where in a year the head coach transforms an underdog into national champions. No, this is a story of how guts, hard work, and a lot of failures accompany the team's rise. And there are a lot of low moments, for sure. In fact, Frank Thunderbirds had several lows, starting from the moment he took the job. Frank Smith took over the reins at UBC in the summer of 1974. And started his campaign with a disastrous first year.
Yeah, I was never scared, but the lowest moment was the first game that we played at UBC. We went out to Saskatoon and got beat 63-0. That was our first game as head coach at UBC, and that was in 1974. So,
taken on late in the season.
What?
You didn't have time to recruit.
Yeah, well, yeah, that wasn't a factor. You know, my wife's saying I got hired in April, so I didn't really have much time to recruit. But, yeah, that was a factor, obviously. But, yeah, we got beat 63-0.
He finished the season with a woeful 1-8 conference record. But something was happening. The times were kind of changing. It was like a domino effect. Every season, the team progressed further and further than they had ever before. From there, the team started gaining momentum, and under Smith, the team went from football nobodies to Hardy Cup champions in 3 years. In 1975, they went 6-4 and were pretty much in the race for the league title until they lost 31-16 to the University of Alberta Golden Bears. Their quarterback, Gordon Penn, became the first UBC player to run 1,000 yards in one season. In 76, the Birds were the first in the regular season with a record of 5-3 and defeated the dominant Saskatchewan Huskies 36-10 to clinch their first Canada West Championship in 14 years. They eventually lost 30-8 to the University of Western Ontario Mustangs, a team that would later become the team's nemesis. But what this was, it was a great comeback of a team that had fallen from grace. What was happening in Vancouver between 1974 and 1976 was incredible. It was huge. It's like the football program was suddenly on steroids, or everyone else was just standing around the pitch as the Birds made milestone after milestone. In 3 years, Coach Frank Smith took a mediocre team and made them the regional champs. What was it about this one man that transformed an entire football program and pushed an entire team of student athletes to disrupt the football status quo?
Well, again, that actually in 76 we won the Hardy Cup and went back east and lost in what was called the Forest City Bowl to Western Ontario. And that was our first real breakthrough. That would have been our third year there. And then from there, it just kept getting better because we got more and more of the good players. And, you know, you have to, as I said before, without being redundant, you've got to have those good players. So that was the key to what we did. And by the time we got into 82, we had a lot of good players.
Their progression was slowed in 1977 when they lost the Hardy Cup to the Calgary Dinos, but they were still going strong. In 1978, they made their first College Bowl appearance, the Nationals. This was it. It seems at long last that the Birds had finally made it. It was their best season since 1939.
Okay, quick question. So you got into UBC in 78. Okay, cool. And that was the first time you played in the College Bowl where you lost to the Queen's Golden Guild, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. And then you played in the 1982, and that was your last year?
Yes.
And that was the one you won, right?
Yes.
That's David Sadu. Recruited to UBC in 1978, he was a three-time All-Star and All-Canadian. He graduated in 1982 with a bachelor's in education and a minor in business, and played for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders in the Canadian Football League for 5 years.
Smith my first time in grade 11 at that BC Lion development camp at Empire Stadium. Was the first time that he said hello to me and shook my hand. And I remember him watching me on every drill that I was doing and nodding his head every time I did something in approval. And he reminded me of General MacArthur type of a guy. You know, somebody that had this great aura about him of leadership. He looked like a great leader to me. And he understood football. And I remember all the professional coaches that were there respected him a lot. And that, and I could tell that he was a special man just from the way he handled himself, just the way his aura was around him, and just the way people respected him that were in the profession. You know, there was the BC Lions professional coaches there. There were professional players there that were helping out at the camp. And they all knew Coach Smith, and they talked to him with respect. I remember that part.
So he came to UBC in 1978, played against the Queen's Golden Guild in UBC's first College Bowl. So David probably has a good idea on what happened that changed the team.
I would say after the 1978 group of guys graduated, we had a young team in 1979 that didn't do very well, but started to gain a lot of experience. And then 1980, we had a really bad team. And I think that was a real turning point, I think, in the career that I had at UBC for 5 years there. Is in 1980, Coach Smith made some major changes and basically changed the outlook of our roster and recruited a bunch of really good football players in 1979 that were real leaders. And those guys in 1980 that weren't part of that group, they left the football team in 1980. And in 1981 and 82, we probably had two of the best teams UBC's ever had.
You got to have a good organization and a good group of people working with you. And, I mean, I always felt that the guys that were working with us as coaches were working with us. They weren't working for us. They were working with us. And then the same thing happened with the players. And, you know, we had some pretty good players. And we had, I think, somewhere in the high 40s number that went on and played in the Canadian Football League. So that was a key factor. We also beat a couple of good American Division II NC2A schools. And then we also had a winning record against Simon Fraser.
Simon Fraser University. They were and are UBC's biggest rivals in the Vancouver region.
So that allowed us to attract more and more good players.
In 1981, they had a league record of 7-1.
It took some time for people to gel, but I think Coach Smith making the decision in 1980 to move in a different direction with different players made the difference. And in 1981, we were 7-1 in league play, and we probably should have won the national championship that year too, but we lost to Alberta in the playoffs at home on a real fluky play.
Yeah.
Our running back, Glenn Steele, fumbled the ball, and Alberta picked the ball up and ran it all the way for a touchdown from our from their own 5-yard line. We were going in to score and finish the game off, and our guy fumbled, the ball popped in the air, and the Alberta guy ran all the way for a touchdown. And we were killing everybody all year long. And we weren't playing our best game in that game.
Yeah.
We ended up losing it. And I remember us all coming to the locker room, and one of our star players, Jason Riley, came into the locker room and said, "We will never, ever let a team get close to us like that again, and we will never stop scoring on a team. We will dominate everybody next year, and I guarantee we'll dominate everybody. And everybody in this room better get in the work and get in the workout room, get their studies done, because next year we're going to win everything." And 1982, we took that attitude from the 81 team into 1982. We never lost a football game.
They had failed to make it to the Nationals that year. With such a strong team, it was devastating to lose to Alberta with such a floozy play after all that hard work. The team had made a resolution to never let the pedal off the metal. The next year was David's last year at UBC. This final, it was an unstoppable force against an immovable wall. UBC was going to face the University of Western Ontario Mustangs in the final. In the 16-year history of the national final at that point, Western had won 4 times and placed second twice. There's an article from Scott McDonald from the UBC in that year. Quote, "The University of Western Ontario is a bit of a football factory like the big, huge U.S. schools. There are 11 coaches and 76 players. UBC, by comparison, has 6 coaches and 53 players. Rules only allow 34 players to dress for the final game." So yeah, the Western Ontario Mustangs were a big deal and weren't to be taken lightly. Okay, so you're probably all bored of listening to a load of interviews about a team from 30 years ago. So here's an amazing recording of UBC's original fight song by Harold King. UBC. Okay, so we're back. Remember the really good group of players that were recruited in 1979 and after? The ones that David mentioned, the ones that really changed how the team played and essentially won the trophies for the team. I got in contact with two of them. The first, Glenn Steele, and the second, Peter Vandebos.
Yeah, I was there. I got there in 1989. That's how far back it is. You got to think about, huh?
Yeah.
I got there and arrived in 1981, and then left in 1984.
That's Glenn.
So 81 was my rookie season, and that's how this thing was starting to build.
Okay.
Then 82 was that incredible year, and then I was there for my third and fourth year left, and then they went on to the next couple championships.
He's probably one of the more successful running backs that UBC has ever produced. Like David, he was a three-time All-Canadian. He also led the country in rushes 3 years in a row and broke Gord Penn's rushing record. He was also the Canada West Outstanding Player of the Year in 81. He played 2 years in the CFL.
I started really young. I started in the flag football community leagues. I grew up in East Vancouver and even played the, I don't know what the next level, I don't know, they call it Pee Wee, but anyways, community football from flag to tackle, and then right out of the gate, even when I was just, I guess you're like 12, 13, somewhere in that range, grade 6 or 7, Notre Dame was the feeder school where I went, where we grew up, and in the east end of Vancouver, and so it was very prolific high school football program, and even though I was going there, kind of was recruited to play there, and then that was 5 years, played at Notre Dame right through from started in the grade 8 up into the juniors and the seniors, and then that's when, obviously, you get into that grade 11, 12, that's when the recruiting starts, and Frank began that recruiting, and basically was between, you know, UBC and SFU and a couple small colleges down in the States, but, I mean, that was the first exposure that I got to Frank Smith, and right from the beginning, it was an impressive introduction and meeting, and, I mean, one of the things that, when you think back now in time, one of his strengths and his attributes was he was a phenomenal recruiter. He was just, you think about the vision he had, how he laid that out, the attention to detail. I mean, he knew as he was building the program, and a couple years before that, they'd gone to the Vanier Cup, but they'd lost in a very close game, and he was building from that, and you know, that how he started laying that out for us and the vision of the folks he was recruiting, and it was, hey, we're going to win the national championship. We're going to beat Simon Fraser. And for him, when I think back on it now, it's probably the other way around. It was beat Simon Fraser and then win the national championship.
Okay. wait, but isn't the Shrum, wasn't the Shrum Bowl like after the Vanier Cup though?
It was. So yeah. It was always, I mean, that's one of the things when I, you know, the detail and the focus and the intensity. And I mean, think about, you know, we're 18 to 20 year old kids. And to try to keep, you know, that 1982 season, we're undefeated. We'd lost to Eastern Washington down in the States. But up in Canada, we're undefeated, and we're going to the national championship. And we go on this tear where we win in Halifax against St. Francis Xavier in an unbelievable game. Come back into Toronto. We win the Vanier Cup. And then, you know, he does this incredible job of these 18- to 20-year-old kids, get us back, get us focused, and then go and beat SFU the next week, which really, you know, everything was on the line from a national championship perspective, because if SFU had beaten us, they could have, in theory, claimed, hey, you know, they're in the national championships,
yeah,
national champions. So he got us back you know, got us focused, got us ready, and we went out and we won that game, and that for up in Canada, we went undefeated for the season.
I think Frank had the ability to see things in people that others may not be able to see.
That's Peter, who also played in the CFL. So good that he warranted his own Wikipedia page. He played for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers like Frank, the Ottawa Rough Riders, and the BC Lions. He was also the fourth overall pick at the 83 CFL draft. We're going to let them do some of the explaining from here on out. It's kind of better to hear it from them, straight from the mouth of the bird. Peter offers an explanation of what changes were implemented in 1980, which kind of echoes some of the things that David mentioned earlier about the recruitment of new guys being really instrumental in their later successes.
Well, that's when all the guys started coming in. That's when David was there, Mike was there, I was there, Peter LeClaire. Kind of some of the old guard was gone at that time, and it was the new face that Frank had worked so hard to find. It was the group that was more, we were Frank's mold, basically. The guys that would work hard, the guys that would stay late, the guys that, you know, whatever Frank said, we did. Because we knew that there was an end to his means. And it was winning.
I think the type of work ethic, the type of attitude, the type of leader that a Pat Kantner, Mike Emery, a Peter Vandenbos, Dave Sadoo, Bernie Glier, there was a certain culture and type of leader Frank was looking for, that the chemistry was right on that team. And I don't know, you can talk any sport, any championship teams, and you know this as well as I do with what you covered. You can have a great collection of athletes, but if that chemistry and that leadership is not in place, you're not going to be successful. And that started with Frank, and it filtered down to the players that he recruited and he put in the certain positions that they played.
Glenn explains why Frank was so successful at recruitment and talks about his interest in basketball and how he thought basketball players were kind of like the perfect athletes.
So if you think about basketball, so think of the big guys, think of the, you know, the linemen, offense, defense, even to your linebackers, DBs, and then flip it to the offensive side between your receivers and the running backs. A lot of football is footwork. It's positioning and it's footwork. And what do you have to do in basketball, especially if you're a big guy underneath? Right positioning, get a footwork, and you have to be coordinated and athletic. So that's why he looked at, which was made a lot of sense, he would look at basketball games and go and recruit and watch the high school kids coming out of high school playing basketball, and that would give him a good indication of what type of athletes they were.
Peter agrees.
You know, I remember Frank even saying to me my second year there, that not a lot of football coaches had figured it out, but one of his recruiting techniques was to go and watch basketball games. Because he felt that basketball players were perhaps the best all-around athletes. Mm. You know, combination of skill, strength, speed, quickness, at team environment, which is exactly what you need on the football field. And I remember thinking at the time, you know, that doesn't make any sense. And then when you really looked around, and we would joke around as a team, half the guys were really good on the court.
Hmm. At this point, they're like twins, basically saying the same thing. Frank was also tough. Peter has a pretty interesting story to tell.
Frank was all about getting the work done. I remember on a play, we were running a skeleton offense, and I went around the corner and blocked one of the sort of the practice-type players and got in a lot of trouble from Frank because I didn't hit him hard enough. And got basically torn up one side and down the other. What are you doing out here if you're not going to go full speed, all that kind of stuff? So the next play, I came around the corner and, you know, hit him, and he basically rolled over and still got yelled at. And yelled at because if you're going to be out here, you do it at 100%.
110%. It's a pretty great story. It shows Frank Smith to be a driver and a guy that pushes for changes. But he was also a guy that was very compassionate and cared about his players.
That same year, I had some a family member that got very ill, and Frank, one of my parents went to talk to him about it, and Frank called me into the office, and it was a completely different Frank. It was the human side of Frank, the off the field, the compassionate, the caring, the whatever you need to do to continue on. If you need time off, if this is, it's better for you to be on the field, however you want to do it, I'll support you through anything. And so really, it's, Frank was too on the field, the general, off the field, the gentleman.
This is pretty significant. It shows that Frank's impact on the team was really about his passion for the sport and his constant, persistent, and unrelenting push for success. This drive, this fire in his eyes, changed the program from an okay team to a competitive one. He liked winning, and he forced everyone around him to win too.
Basically, I was recruited by some U.S. colleges. I was recruited heavily by Simon Fraser and by Frank. And the first part of my decision was when Bob DeJulius at the time was the Simon Fraser coach. He came over to my house to meet me and my parents.
Bob DeJulius?
Bob DeJulius was his name, yeah. He came over to my house, and then Frank came over to the house as well. And I just got a feeling of from Frank that he wanted to win.
Hmm.
And then I went to the Lions high school camp where they sort of brought in all the top high school players in the province.
I think Dave went to that as well.
Yeah. And so Mike Emery and I, that's where we first met, was there. He went to Richmond, I think Steveston, or I don't even know which high school he went to anyways. And I went to Windsor in North Vancouver.
And what time was this? What year was this?
79.
Oh, 79. Okay, cool.
Yeah, so we were there then together, and we chatted a little bit. And I remember Frank on the field always watching the two of us. I remember him kind of following us around. I remember seeing that and thinking to myself,
What's funny about it is, and you know, when I think back on that and that recruiting, and I don't know if it was the first occasion, but it's just the one that I remember. And I remember it was on, I think it was, you know, it was either a Sunday night or a Monday night, and he was going to pick me up. We're going to head out for dinner, and we're going to start to talk about just, you know, the benefits of UBC and the benefits of the program. And the thing that I remember was it was 6 o'clock, and, you know, you don't really think too much about that. If he shows up early, if he shows up at 6:15, you know, I'm going to be ready. 6 o'clock, bang, doorbell rings. It's Coach Smith, right on time, with big smile on his face, comes in, meets my parents. Everything from the time he picked me up to the dinner conversation, sharing with me the benefits and the attributes of going to UBC, not only from a football perspective, but a life perspective and career perspective, and then getting me back home, I'm sure was mapped out to the T. And it's one of the things that I always remembered. And I also, you know, things that stick in your mind was just when you talk to various people about, you know, different topics, how committed, how passionate he was, and how articulate he was in terms of what he was trying to communicate and what he was trying to do. And remember, you're, you know, trying to express yourself and get a kid who's 18 years old to understand what you're trying to do. And he was extremely efficient in doing that. And now the flip side, you know, which I won't mention his name, but when I was being recruited from the other side, I mean, there was a clear difference between what Frank represented, what he was trying to do, what it would mean to me for my future and career versus what I was getting from the other coaches that were recruiting. I mean, it wasn't even close.
This trend in UBC's recruitment, where Frank's recruiting ability directly influenced the decision that the potential recruits made, is particularly compounded by the fact that both of these players, Glenn and Peter, made their decisions after initially meeting Frank.
When you watch Blake talk and you watch Frank talk, They're the same person, just different ages.
Could you, like, talk to me more about that demeanor? Just, like, describe it a little bit. Like, what did you see in particular? What were, like, the qualities you saw that, like, you know, drove you towards him?
The passion that he spoke with and the fire in his eyes.
Let's take it back. On November 20th, 1982, UBC defeated, no, brutalized the Mustangs. The Mustangs were probably the best collegiate team in Canada at that point, but they lost to UBC in a game that ended 39-14. The headline in the UBC, for the article written by Scott McDonald, said UBC easy champions. Okay, so I'm going to reference Scott McDonald again. You know, the guy that wrote the article right after UBC's Vanier Cup victory. There's a paragraph in the article that goes like this. Quote, at the Vanier Cup Saturday, in Toronto's Varsity Stadium, the only way that the University of Western Ontario football team could have hoped to match the UBC Thunderbirds would have been if they had followed the horse that the Toronto police used to clear fans off the field at the end of the game. Unquote. This is some interesting imagery. Even after his Birds had won the Vanier Cup, Frank told the reporters in a post-game conference about some loose ends he had to tie up back in Vancouver, BC. According to a report done by the Thunderbird Football Association, he had, quote, unfinished business, unquote. After the Thunderbirds won the national trophy, they had to come back home to defend their legitimacy against Simon Fraser University. Their biggest local football rivals played against them in a yearly match that was dubbed the Shrum Bowl. In recent years, the clash no longer happens. Both schools do not compete in the same league, have different schedules, and so are unable to find the perfect time to play against each other. But back in the day, the Shrum Bowl over the years became a bigger deal for Frank's Birds, bigger than the Vanier Cup.
I grew up and raised in East Vancouver, went to Notre Dame High School, and Notre Dame High School was really a feeder to Simon Fraser University, and there was a number of tremendous athletes that came out of Notre Dame, Louis Pisaglia that went to Simon Fraser, Glenn Jackson went to Simon Fraser from Notre Dame, just to mention a few. That was the direct line. That was Bob DeJulius, who was a phenomenal coach, phenomenal recruiter, had a great connection with Al Blesch and George Oswald at Notre Dame, and that's where it was an automatic that we would go there. Now, Bob DeJulius left. A new coach came in at the time, Rod Woodward. The program started to change, but at the same time, you know, I'm not sure how much, because of that history that was involved there, how much recruiting actually went on from UBC to Notre Dame, and Frank Smith changed that all. He changed it all. He got me, Casey Steele, Rob Ross, Roger Zen, Gino Del Giglio, so you and our high school team had won the national championship, had gone undefeated, so he picked up some pretty good players coming out of this Notre Dame high school that typically went to SFU. He's got them now at UBC because the Shrum Bowl was everything. And that's where we referenced that national championship in Toronto. There's a direct connection and link because for us, that rivalry in Vancouver was everything. And at the same time, SFU could look at that as if they won the national championship, they beat us. So the Shrum Bowl was everything to us. And as we moved to UBC, we kind of changed the dynamics of that. And for us, it was a great decision because all 4 years that I went there, we beat SFU, which was which was terrific. At whatever point Frank had made this commitment and the program was changing, I mean, it was him. I mean, it was, and it's funny, as we said, you know, in the opening, between the national championship and Frank's priorities, national championship and SFU would have been that his priority. So I think he changed the culture and the emphasis, and he understood, I think, from a recruiting platform, whatever college was more dominant, we're going to get the elite players coming out of the high school. And he changed that, and he started getting the elite players. And I think, you know, I think you have to there is certainly a connection between, I think, what Bob DeJulius was doing and the structure they had in place over at SFU. When that changed, that certainly had, you know, I think that contributed to the change as well.
2 weeks after their Vanier Cup victory, the T-Birds played in Vancouver against their regional rivals and more than doubled SFU's score with a 19-8 win at the Empire Stadium.
You know, for me, you know, when we came out of the regular season and we started that playoff run, I mean, it was like from you know, that St. Evex game in Halifax to the national championship against Western Ontario, and then on to that SFU game. I mean, that 3 weeks. I'm sure you talk to any of those guys. I mean, being you're on the road. You know, you're young again. You're on the road, and I mean, it was just that period of time where everything came together. And I mean, those games were just phenomenal. I mean, just everything came together. And everyone played so great. It was a real, and that's what's so great about going back to these dinners where they revisit it, because I think a lot of people think back and go, yeah, that was a pretty special time, pretty unique and pretty special what that team accomplished. And it's great that you're doing this for, it's actually, you know, you're older now, but you forget, I mean, it's Coach Smith, and I think it's great you're doing this because, you know, the credit goes to him for pulling that thing together.
Yeah.
You know who Dizzy Dean is?
Who's that?
He was a great baseball pitcher. He was the last pitcher in the major leagues that won 30 games.
What team was that for?
St. Louis Cardinals, okay. 1935. Anyhow, you know, he went on and became a baseball commentator, you know, and when he was a baseball commentator, they said something to him about, you know, bragging, and he said it ain't bragging when you've done it.
So I talked to Richard Brower, the football commentator for the Thunderbirds, in between 1985 and 1987. I jumped on a bus to Hillcrest Park, where the Vancouver Canadiens' home is, then at Bailey Stadium to see him. We talked a little, and he gave me several hours' worth of amazing tape and interviews. But one thing he made clear was that he didn't know Frank enough to make a comment about him, at least not like any of the other players. Which is a fair assessment to make. I did, however, find his year-in-review report on the 1986 team's win. That was the year that the Thunderbirds faced the Western Mustangs in another final, their second in 5 years. Okay, so let's round this up. It's 1985. The last time the T-Birds even smelled the Nationals was 3 years ago. In the years leading up, the University of Calgary Dinos had achieved Western Canadian hegemony. Three straight Hardy Cups. An even bigger feat was that they had won two Vanier Cups in 3 years, between 83 and 85. This is what the Birds had to face now. They'd lost to Alberta 38-13 and had a conference record of 4-4 to end their campaign in 1985. They were tied with Manitoba and Alberta, and had they won, they would have gone into the Canada West playoffs with a 5-4 record. The T-Birds really needed to do it again. Take the national title to prove that the 82 win wasn't just luck, but talent and hard work.
Welcome back to Thunderbird Year in Review. Contributing greatly to UBC's outstanding year in athletics, the varsity football team were the first to assume the media spotlight in September of 1986. With a report on the Vanier Cup winning Thunderbirds, here's Richard Brower.
The 1987 football season was a brilliant one for the UBC Thunderbirds as they took their second national championship in 5 years. Coach Frank Smith led the team through a perfect 8-0 regular season, then capped the year off with a dying seconds 25-23 win over Western in the Vanier Cup. Claiming first at the end of the regular WIFL season, the T-Birds faced the defending national champions, the Calgary Dinosaurs, in the WIFL final. The T-Birds had to be favored to win at home against the Dinosaurs, but no one expected a 49-3 blowout, least of all Coach Frank Smith.
Well, I just think it's one of those things that's kind of difficult to explain. If any of us could explain that, we could probably bottle it and make $1 million.
Yeah.
They just didn't play very well that night, and we did.
The Birds rolled up 611 yards in offense in the game. Terry Cochran running for 3 touchdowns, and Matt Pierce picked up a couple, including a 62-yard punt return. Quarterback Jordan Gagne was brilliant as well, hitting Mike Bellefontaine and Rob Ross with touchdown strikes. The Birds then traveled to Lennoxville, Quebec for the national semifinal, meeting the Bishop's Gators, champions of the Ontario-Quebec League. It was a tough game for the Birds, playing in a 3-hour difference time zone on a snow-covered field. The Bishop's Gators were a fired-up football team and quickly built a lead on the Birds.
Big opening drive for Bishop's. And here they go again. Zatilny to the right side, along with Makoro to the left. Zayon.
Shotgun.
Shotgun Harris. And it's a low snap, but he picks it up. He rolls to the right side, looking for Zatilli in the end zone. Against Norman, touchdown! Pete Norman!
Twice, UBC had to fight back from 10-point deficits before finally winning the game 32-30. But it was a finish to the game that was to be remembered. The Gators were down by 8 with less than a minute to go with the ball on the UBC 4-yard line.
In the backfield, Walker behind Johnson in the eye. First and goal, goal from the 4. It will be the Walker fake, and Harris will keep himself. He's got the touchdown!
After Gators quarterback Tony Harris ran it in, Bishops was faced with a 2-point convert to tie the game at 32. On the first attempt, pass interference was called on the Birds, and Bishops had a second chance for a 2-point convert from just 1 yard out.
To tie the game, 32-30, UBC.
More options for Harris this time. He can run it straight up if he wants to from a yard out. It will go to Johnson. Has he got it?
No.
He's held. He's held at the goal line. He's not going to score the 2 points, and the Birds are ecstatic.
And they don't get it in.
They don't get it in. Big play.
A yard to go.
Then came the biggest week of the season. On November 15th, the T-Birds faced the Western Mustangs at Toronto's Varsity Stadium for the Vanier Cup. The matchup had been building all year as neither team had lost a game and were 1-2 in the rankings most of the season.
The biggest thing that we concentrated on was to make sure that our players did not allow any of the distractions around them of Vanier Cup week affect them, and that they concerned themselves and concentrated on the football game. There were a lot of things that we wanted to do against Western, particularly throw the ball, which we did quite effectively.
Like the Bishops game, the national final was another tough contest. This time, though, the T-Birds took it to their opponents early, building a 17-1 lead at halftime. Then UBC's offense sputtered in the second half, and Western picked up touchdowns from wide receiver Andy Filipiak and running backs Dave Sapungis and Blake Marshall. Western led 23-18 late in the fourth quarter. Frank Smith then pulled quarterback Jordan Gagne out of the game, putting in Eric Pitato with 3 minutes to go. Pitato was finally able to get the Birds' offense rolling in the dying moments. With just 8 seconds left, the Birds were on the Western 4-yard line. Frank Smith instructed Pitato to go to veteran slot back Rob Ross.
As we were throwing the ball into the end zone off of a quick pass where the quarterback takes 2 steps and launches the ball so we wouldn't waste a lot of time on the clock because we had 8 seconds when the ball was snapped and it was a second down play. We felt if we didn't score on that play, we'd have time to run one more play. And then I guess the other reason is we wanted to go to our most reliable receiver, and that was Rob Ross.
Ross hauled in Potato's pass with 4 seconds on the clock, and unbelievably, UBC had pulled off a 25-23 Vanier Cup win over Western. It was a perfect ending to what had been a perfect season.
Smith retired in 1994 after 21 years of being UBC's head coach, with an overall record of 126 wins, 4 draws, and 94 losses. He nearly resigned in 1984, according to a UBC article. But fortunately for the program, he stayed and won the Nationals again to solidify his legacy in the UBC history books. Before embarking on this project, I had no idea what it would be about. I went through hours of archives and old broadcasts in search for the right story. The one that I thought everyone on the UBC campus and Vancouver at large ought to know. I even made several brackets for different people and made pros and cons lists because I knew this was necessary. It might have taken me a couple of months to come to this conclusion, but I'm finally here. And despite all good judgment and his own wishes to give all the credit to players and coaches, I have to say it. Coach Frank Smith is arguably the most important man in UBC football history. Thank you to CITR for the support in this production and to the UBC Centennial Initiatives Fund. Thanks to the athletics department, who helped me in every way they could. Also, big thanks to everyone I interviewed, which include, but are not limited to, David Sadu, Peter Vandebos, Glenn Steele, Richard Brower, Diane Smith, and of course, Frank Smith. Special thanks to Madeline Taylor, CITR Spoken Word Coordinator, for helping me out with this documentary and encouraging me the entire way. I also made use of information from the UBC's archives, the Thunderbird Football Association, and the UBC Hall of Fame. The music you heard 15 minutes in was Hail UBC, UBC's fight song created by Harold King. The music includes Broke for Free by Night Owl, Brooks by Kai Angel, and Turquoise by Puddington Bear, all obtained from the Free Music Archive. If you want more information about the UBC Thunderbirds sport teams and their colorful history, totally check out the UBC Archives and CITR's archive of audio tapes.
You've been listening to CITR's UBC 100 Doc Series. We would like to thank the UBC Centennial Initiatives Fund, Peter Doolin, Emily Morgan, Shyla Seller, and Katie Harris for researching, digitizing, and cataloging our archived tape. Nardwar the Human Serviette for curating the collection. Thanks to Robert and Bronwyn at the UBC Library Digitization Center for partnering with us to digitize, launch, and host the audio collection. Irwin at the UBC University Archives. And to Madeline Taylor for organizing this project and supporting our documentary producers. For interviews with the producers, podcasts, and more information, visit our website, citr.ca.